has taken over. So I'm going to ask him to speak to a presentation on those matters. I'll address myself to some of the issues in the background to the change in leadership, the resignation of the previous commissioner and the forensic report. I'm going to address myself to those matters. But let me just say that I think the whole story really started in 2014, March 2014, when I went on one of my visits to the entities when we went to the CIPC. Our delegation was confronted with a demonstration. We were presented with a memorandum from the staff, and the memorandum had complaints about governance issues. It had complaints about matching and placement of individuals as a result of some of the changes that were taking place in the structure of the labor force of the institution. There was a complaint about the non-existence of the closure of the call center, the regular ordinary call center. And there were demands that individuals be, fired, I guess would be the way of putting it. And what we did was, when we were confronted with this, talking to everyone who was present, we said the way forward must be to go into the details of those. And represented on the task team was, first of all, someone from the commissioner's office or commission, and that was, in fact, Advocate Fowler. We appointed people from the Office of the DG and Agency Management. We appointed Mr. Thomo, who was a staff manager in my office, and there were representatives of NEAO. And they were working through the issues that were there. I should say that before the report was concluded, the representatives from NEAO withdrew. The rest of the task team went together and identified how many people were disadvantaged in terms of placements, how many, and there weren't many, there weren't huge numbers. And also, that there was agreement on all parties that there should be a forensic investigation into the allegations of mismanagement that were put forward. And so that task team eventually, toward the end of last year, it reported with its proposals. We went to a general meeting of staff, which was actually quite a fractious occasion. But we went to a general meeting of staff, we presented this and said these are some of the things that we're doing. And then I was asked by the commissioner to write a directive for to implement those issues, those recommendations that have come out of the task team. We then had a lot of debate and discussion about whether or not there was the authority to do that, whether this was interference with the management of the institution. We eventually sat down and we came to some kind of amicable arrangement that we wouldn't debate who has authority, but that we would get to go along and implement the recommendations, the key recommendations, at any rate. And of course, while this was happening, we were also having the forensic investigation. Now, I think our overall intention and purpose as the ministry, as the office of the DG, as the agency management, the overall intention was to stabilize the institution and to create a basis on which it could continue with the important reforms that it was instituting against a background of quite a fractious history in the organization. But the reforms of the sort, and I think people have seen the rollout of the kiosks, the interactions with SARS and Home Affairs, and the use of biometric data, the simplification, in other words, of the process of registration of companies, the arrangements with banks and all of that, so that the fundamental aim and objective is to create an institution which is capable of providing an efficient and cost-effective service to clients. Now, in terms of the fractious environment, we've encountered this in other agencies, and we took a decision that there would be a forum on labor relations matters of CODI. Our whole intention around this is to devise a work to support the institutions to environment, and that was kind of what we offered. Whatever the issues in the labor relations environment, we offered as a service like that. And I should say that just in the last week, I have engaged with a number of entities who report directly around their annual performance plans. And one of them, without any prompting from us, the National Regulator of Commodity Specifications, thanked us for the role we were playing in trying to sort out some of these matters. Anyway, then the forensic report is concluded. The forensic report didn't find that the previous commissioner had, as it were, was involved in any kind of personal looting of the institution, if I can put it that way. But it did find that there were some substantive matters of procurement in terms of a number of contracts with entities that were contracted in the ICT space, where there were significant irregularities where people had. These are also matters that the audit commission were looking at. There were a couple of companies irregularly appointed to accounting firms, and there were a number of findings around that, which I won't go through. But the recommendation was, it said that disciplinary action be considered against the former commissioner in terms of Section 38 of the PFMA for approving a sick contract award to one of those companies without ensuring compliance in the proper procurement process, approving the second contract to another one of these companies with an amount of 997 million rand without ensuring compliance, and approving a flawed deviation memorandum regarding the two independent contractors for the refurbishment of a building. Now, what happens when we have these? Our policy is the chips must fall where the chips must fall. So we handed this over to our legal department, and the legal advice to me was that we should proceed to ask the commissioner to indicate why she should not be suspended. That was the last correspondence I had with her before receiving a letter of recommendation, a resignation, a letter of resignation. So that's the background, I think, in a nutshell. We appointed the deputy commissioner as the acting commissioner. I met with him, and we said to him that his mandate is not to deviate from the program of modernization and of improving the service delivery. That is the fundamental mandate. We are keen to see kiosks rolled out. We are keen to see people being able to go to banks and register companies. We are keen to see an increasingly efficient and competitive process of company registration, as well as to beef up the capacity on painted registration, as is another issue. I think that is what we said to the commissioner, acting commissioner, and that is the mandate that we have given him. I think you'll see when he gives his report that there's a higher degree of stability in the institution. I think we have observed one thing which is not directly related to this, but we think is a positive development. The number of runners has declined. The impact of runners is declining. I think what we need to do is to just ensure that we have a stable, consultative environment in which we bring the staff on board while we make those kind of adjustments. That, I think, is in a nutshell was the background to the resignation of the previous commissioner. I don't want to go into issues of interpersonal relations dynamics and stuff like that and so on, but just to say that it was never our intention or desire to get rid of the commissioner. It was always our intention to try to stabilize the environment in the institution and to overcome some of the problems that were created as a result of instability in the institution. Let me now move on to the new codes. I think that in the debate and discussion that has been on collective schemes, there's a danger that we miss the wood for the trees. And I think the main Commons. This is the new category of combining enterprise development and supply development into a single category, which is called supplier development. And what we're saying here is that big companies need to be doing what we see happening in countries in Asia, successfully industrializing economies, working to ensure that their suppliers are able to actually perform the tasks required, that they are involved in a number of programs and projects to try to strengthen their capacity and bring them into the supply chain. That's what you said. Skills development is something which you can't have effective running of an enterprise in South Africa if you're not actively involved in skills development. But also, if you're not involved in skills development, then what are you doing for actually empowerment of people? As you know, the change in the law has meant we'll be establishing a commissioner, which will be looking at cases where fronting, according to statutory definition, are taking place and will come up with appropriate remedies. One thing we have said is that if you don't hit 40% of the target, then you go down in place. That's a penalty again. And I've heard a number of companies say, well, you know, we used to do this, now we're going to do that. And my answer to that has always been, well, if it was just that we would have to argue to tick the box differently and end up where you were, what is the point? It is actually to try to incentivize new kinds of behavior and new involvement in these kinds of things. I might say that the only real players in the space of supply development were companies that were seeking equity equivalents. And one of those, which I launched at the previous podcast in the last recently, was IBM. The global chair of IBM came, saw the president. I was at the meeting. She was over the moon about South Africa. They were creating a facility to strengthen and develop ICT service providers. They said they don't do this in many other countries, and also to do research on applications of ICT. That's what came out of that part in the equity equivalent. So I think we're going to see more of those kind of programs. The whole front, I should mention another one, this practice we had in the past where anybody who was involved in a supplier development relationship at the top were going to small black suppliers and saying you must go and spend $40,000 and get a certificate from a verification agency to say that you are black owned. We said that's nonsense. And so nobody was able to insist on that. They will now have to accept an affidavit. And if you think the person is lying, then the ability is to go to the commissioner. So we think we have removed red tape and cost that is impacting on many small companies. So the thrust is to strengthen PE as a tool of bringing black people into important roles and positions in the productive economy. That's what the thrust is. Now, then when we come to the collective schemes, of course we think that collective schemes, community schemes, broad empowerment is important. Of course we think that. It was never that we want to recycle a bunch of individuals and let those individuals benefit from every deal, and that this is what we were trying to do. What we have confronted was we have confronted what I think we could say is a number of dodgy ESOPs, employee share ownership programs. Now, it's fair enough you have the trust. It's fair enough that these schemes are broad. But we did find a number of them were verging on really not providing people in those schemes with real access to the benefits, with real access to an asset, and all of those kinds of things. That's what we saw. And that was motivation for putting a cap on the number of points that could be earned. It wasn't going to be retrospective, it was going to be in the future. It was always like that. But I think that on reflection, what we thought was maybe we've taken a rather large sledgehammer as either fly, and that we might be sending out the signal that these schemes are not encouraged, when in fact the opposite is the case. And so what we did on Friday was the Gazette withdrew the notice that had previously been existed. We are back to the status quo. We have appointed a task team which will look at the mischief and how to fix it in a smarter way, to put it that way. My only inclination is to say this is the sort of matter that probably falls in the court of the commissioner. So that we're looking at a way in which the commissioner, the commissioner who looks at fronting and so on and so forth, could be involved in the standard process. So I just wanted to say that on that score, that's where we are. Let me stop at this point. Maybe there's one last point. There were 18 months of phasing on the new codes. I think everybody had a huge opportunity to get to know them. We need to get to know them. We haven't rushed them through. I think that the way I describe it now, every interaction I've had, I can't see anybody who tells me it's wrong. That we must actually move towards empowering people to become players in the real economy. That's what we're trying to do. We learn as we go, as we do. We learn, I think, that we probably had a big sledgehammer to fly in the collective budget, and so we improve it, we change it. That's the way we're moving. So let's stop there, and I would suggest perhaps that we take the presentation from the acting commissioner on what's happened as we move forward. And also, I don't know if the DG wants to come in on the DG coming in as well.
So we're going to go straight over to the Acting Commissioner, Advocate Horner.
Thank you very much, my sir. Good morning to Chairperson and honourable members once again. I think the focus that I will do in my presentation is just to take the committee through what has been happening at the TAPC over the last few weeks to try and show how we are focusing on stabilizing the environment, as well as look at some of the past strategies that were presented a few weeks back, and to see how far we are regarding those developments. This is to put into the context of that the strategy hasn't fundamentally changed since I've become acting commissioner in the last few weeks, because I was also infrastructure very much involved in the development of the strategy and the AMP, and therefore it will be a continuation, but in a structured way of being trying to tackle some of the issues behind us through the Ministry of Support, as well as through some of the concerns of the highest organization. So it's the state of the organization, the way forward in certain of the areas, and to give an assurance that we are fundamentally working as an organization for improving access to service delivery, as per what our strategy mandate is, as per the presentation of some of you this fact. My short presentation will focus on three areas. Maybe I'll try and deal with issues around staffing and HR matters, and then go on to strategic plan and of how we are dealing with that. And then try and close the committee how we as an organization are operating currently in some of our service delivery and what we need to determine in our turnaround times. Regarding the first aspect of staffing and HR matters and staffing engagements, the first thing I did was when I assumed the position of acting commissioner, I called a general staff meeting, all staff, together with the Office of Director General and the Agency of Management Units, and organized labor representatives on the 4th of May. This was to keep the organization abreast and informed of what has occurred regarding the commissioner, and also as to how we will be laying out a plan on tackling some of the issues going forward. But most importantly, during the course of the meeting, what was stressed is that the organization requires service delivery stability, and staff need to understand that the work comes first. At that particular meeting, there were pledges given by staff, pledges given by organized labor, inclusive of how that the organization will not function correctly, it will function fully, and the actual word that they used during the course of the meeting by Chairperson was that the organization will now focus on being well-oiled machine. And those are words that have been banned around free during the past few weeks about how people are working toward that particular goal. Coupled with that is that the organized labor leadership is currently engaging the DGI in the form of a centralized bargaining forum, and there have been numerous meetings held on that also been 7th of May to bring stability to the whole bargaining aspect of the various entities and bring it under the DGI. And we as the CIPC are fully involved in that process and partaking in the outcomes of that bargaining forum. But coupled with that is that during the course of the last few months, we have been trying to put together a regional bargaining forum and the requirements. There have been issues around the structure of engagements in that, but under the auspices of the CTMA who have agreed, we started the process for recognition agreement, the process of implementing and establishing our own divisional bargaining forum. And in the course of last week, when I met with the representatives of Organ River, there has now been a willingness to restart and reconstitute that particular process and to conclude on us formalizing it in an effective manner so that we can engage fully on all of these issues. As the Minister said, that we value the support given by the Office of the DG and the agency management units in the city when it comes to the issues of engagement organizations. And in this regard, we have been doing so quite effectively. What came up quite clearly in some of the engagements with the ODA and organization was that we need to have a strong focus on our HR capability. So in that sense, I engaged with organization to appoint an acting capacity as divisional manager of HR, which was a senior manager in several ways, but it's still a part of the organization. And there has been a situation that shows the willingness to engage with a particular individual, and they can put all of the HR matters in a structured forum on a weekly basis as to deal with them as they arise. What I also instituted is that I have engaged the two representatives and chairpersons of organizations to have bi-weekly meetings with them, just a quick 30-minute, 1-hour meeting, just to see what the burning issues have arise, so that they can be tackled on an urgent basis regarding this. So this will be a change. So she came those issues for you, and you would have that. That is what I say. One issue that staff in general had was that when we did mention a place in exercise, at that time there were a whole contingent of contractors who went through in the CIPC. And we said that we do not want to have contract workers, we want to have permanent employees who receive all the benefits of permanent employment. But what happened at that time is that when we took the whole case up 54 contract workers, couldn't find placement for all of them based on the levels that they had. So there was a call that we should try and find placement for them and bring them back. So one of the first engagements that I had with HR was to see regarding the whole organizational structure, look at any retirements that might have happened, any resignations that might have happened, and engage on those contract workers who we could not place to bring them back for permanent employment. We did find placement for them. Our HR department engaged with them. Seven of five five of the seven stated that there was accept appointments, two said that they are employed elsewhere and therefore have moved on, and we quickly then engaged on giving them new contracts of employment and then brought them back. As far as two who joined the organization in June, because they employed elsewhere and serving in those periods. The reason why we're doing it on a very speedy basis is because we recognize that in our call center environment, we want to engage fully and put up what is called a traditional call center and move away from the model that we have to decide. Doesn't seem to fit the organization into volumes, and so we're trying to capacitize the call center as quickly as possible, and therefore we're watching some staff regarding that. The CIPC, we have a new structure of 634 posts. We have 445 full posts, and we therefore want to fully capacitize the organization by way of recruitment drive. We do have currently a moratorium on the filling of vacancies that was governed under the CCMA agreement by the Howell. But we are currently in full negotiations between myself, the Office of the Director General, our acting regional manager, and organizing about how we, in this case, to see how we can make an uplift at the particular moratorium and therefore recruit the discipline vacancy. We definitely have vacancies that we want to fully in IT in particular, and some in the finance area going forward because we have some capacity concerns there. They are wanting to the substitute of matching and placing, which we have in a structured form, and therefore we will deal with those issues, and which goes hand in hand with the lifting of the moratorium currently. But I said the five core positions are full within a week. We've also taken staff from other areas who want the willingness to work with the call center, and we have moved them permanently there, and therefore we are dealing with capacitizing that area. But in terms of the new call center model, as I said, we moved to a traditional model where previously we tried something called a Swedish model. It didn't work in our environment because staff were inundated with large volumes based on the fact that we see numerous applications for registration and amendments, and therefore couldn't balance between the answering of calls as well as trying to serve the daily work in terms of registration and application services. So we're now dealing with having a full call center. We've identified 29 positions in the structure of the outlook and making it any bigger than it currently is. That will require further approval. So we've got 29 positions reallocated to the call center. 8,000 staff members have shown a willingness to join the call center without creating too much of a hole in the area from which they come from, because we have meetings with managers, a meeting with management, to see how we can do it in a structured manner. And those that could move absolutely done so, and therefore it was green. We've taken a further 500 staff, so we will therefore in some of the first phase of the Hill Call Center, we have basically come to the conduction of the 8 permanent staff with the 5 that will be joining, and therefore the first phase of fully operational call center is currently in motion as well. We found the space that has just been set up, all the computers, all the headsets, everything is basically ready to go. We also, in tandem with that setting up in some of the first phase, we then found 16 corporate call center positions that we need to recruit urgently. And in the course of this week, that will go out. Because the nature of the call center position is that we will probably receive many applications. We are working closely with the Department of Labor. We have portals to deal with how we start these new applications. And therefore, we see those 16 positions installed on a very urgent basis to start off our 29 position call center as well. The Minister has mentioned the issue about that. Just what we term just over the seminar and how we're going to roll that out, because it's a big mandate as far as our strategy is concerned, and many of the members in the room have seen it, what has been developed across the biometrics. And the current deployment of those South Africa seminars are that they are 43 SST deployed, 14 in Cape Town, in the Cape Town Service Center, we have 12 in the Victoria or the Sun Park Service Center. Many of you have seen, we have 13 deployed in the Halton Center, in Johannesburg, CRPC Service Center. But also a call for us to deal with issues around larger companies. So we have a satellite office in the JSE, as well as the deployments of two self-service terminals to put in operation in the JSE. And just this week, towards the end of last week and yesterday, we managed to deploy two to the IDC in Stanton, and I will speak about our IDC collaboration with Friday in the presentation. So basically, we are holding out a big focus, and a big focus for me will be to roll up as big as possible, country-wide, and therefore have access to various areas around the country. We're also exploring collaboration between the NYCA, who are willing to accept some of our SSTs in their offices, and they will deal with that industry. And we were on the cusp of putting a few of our SSTs in SARS before they had a leadership and change and management change. And so I'm trying to revitalize that relationship in order for us to see how we can deploy it there. But the collaboration we currently do have, and the deployments of SSTs and our services that we do have, and the first one is we have the Transnet Business Hubs, which is seen as a very good partner because these business hubs are all over the country, the national footprints of them, and what is seen as a one-stop shop because with the Transnet Business Hubs in them have many agencies such as SARS, development finance agencies, and we will provide registration and advice to our company. So we deployed a few there. Two, we deployed the SST hub in Johannesburg. On the 29th of May, we will deploy a further two to a growing area that we heard and seen in Songkran, Western Cape. That will be launched on the 29th of May between the Minister of Public Enterprise and Small Business regarding that particular hub. In June, we will deploy two to the R in Northern Cape. There's been a call there for us to provide our services in that area. We will deploy a further five Buffalo City municipalities in Canada. Also towards June, July, we just working on the issue of the space and the renovation of the offices. And then we're going to deploy another three to the transport business hub in Mount Place in Hoko. The renovation is currently ongoing regarding that. Thank you for Milana. A exciting new collaboration that has just come about in the last few months is our collaboration with the IDC, the Industrial Development Corporation, who also has a massive national footprint and offices all over the country. And with our negotiations with them, they are quite willing to partner for us because they also have one-stop-shop capability. And therefore, we want to deploy our self-service terminals and registration services to them. As I said, this was the first one. We went live in the hosting domain at IDC here in Austin, Stanton. We are now currently in negotiations for the second phase to speedily deploy into their offices in Polokwane, Nelspruit, and Bloemfontein areas, and then offer integrated services regarding what they have and what we bring to the table regarding company registration, disclosure, and time filing, together in a couple of year assistance programs, financial problems offered by the IDC, so that young entrepreneurs can work and deal with issues in one environment. So we're quite excited about the IDC coming on board, and therefore we will continue to update as we roll out many other services in their offices. The Minister mentioned also in opening what we have in the bank, as far as the launch of the other banks is concerned, is also moving quite rapidly. In the last week, I met with all the banks, all the four big banks, to deal with the issue of the development, and to deal with the issue of the staff levy, because all know that it's the only FNB that has fully launched in 2013, and today they've registered approximately 25,000 companies to the Pacific portal. They're looking at the second phase now of adding additional services that we have, for example, the provision of energy returns, because they've seen a call from their clients that they want, they have a portal and they want to go through it and use their bank as well as the CIPC services in a single phase. I was with the Standard Bank, as I said, in the last week, the development team, marketing team, and awareness team, and they are fully developed at the advanced stage of their rollout. And I put a line in plan for them, and I said, I want full rollout by the 1st of July, which we have committed to. So the 1st of July, they're going to go live, and therefore we're catching them in the space of also increasing our footprint and increasing our service. Regarding Absa Bank and Bank were events that took a bit longer, they had the heels as far as coming on board is concerned. But they've seen how it has worked in the other bank space and how the clients have appreciated the service. So they also want to move quite rapidly. I believe Absa is moving to rebranding the Barclays, and therefore they want to get this development over and done with. They also offer the service. I met with them. They also had an advanced stage now, and they said they actually intend to launch this 1st of August because they want to be changed over to Barclays. So when they do the Barclays change over, they will have the service attached as part of their package. Nedbank also, I met with him, they have come to the party. We have tested the end-to-end process between the legislation and the opening of the accounts just in the course of last week. It has worked. We're dealing with the issue of the service level agreements and signing of a contract and creating individual bank accounts with them, and therefore we will have personal banks. In the next 3 months, 4 months, I see all four major banks in the loop and provide these particular services quickly and speedily. We got a collaboration with the DCI and my colleagues from BDE here who I just met last week. I think the members of NOAA, the last time I was in Parliament, there was a rollout by the Honourable Deputy Minister Messina on the launch of the integrated registration and BDE certificate service for intensive micro enterprises, which we provide for our CIPC terminals of CIOs. I think we've done quite well. We've seen an uptake in the usage of it. Today we have done 6,640 calls as of last week, so there's obviously much more now. But we've seen that there is a willingness for people wanting to use this because it's a free service and provided through these portals. What we held in some of our meetings with the BE unit last week is that we need providers to government agencies as per the call of the DCI to provide the service through that. But also to test the agency portal and to mold upon what to provide BE services in some agencies do not have the registration of the company linked to it. So if you have a company registration previously and now you want to go and get a BE certification, you'll be able to go through that process and get that. There has been a issue of development is working, and we will roll it out. We also need to deal with the issue of a further awareness campaign to say that these services are fully available. They are disclosure and certification services on SST free of charge, and therefore we are ourselves and DTI collaboration with BE units will be raising that, that awareness campaign shortly. We always had real-time business staff, which was enhanced in the last 18 months, whereby the development team got together and worked on new technology, and therefore as you register your company, you get your tax number, the reduction of data works very, very well. We've seen that it is nothing personal, you put it on taking to no level because it's actually working and functioning. We just need to deal with the issue of how do we employ some of ourselves, self-service, and deal with the tax loop. We're dealing with the uptake of the bank loop, but we need to deal with the tax loop, how that is. Even a new collaboration coming on board with the URF, they have come to see us, they have used our self-service centers, they're quite impressed with the way that we develop it with biometrics, from the use of paper, and therefore we're entering this collaboration with them to also provide the UA reference numbers when the registrations are done, because we will ask for the data and they will then update and they will upload it and do their checks and verifications and send us the numbers in order for us to provide this one single service to companies. In the IT space, and when I come to Parliament, I always get asked about what is happening in IT and what developments are being rolled out in that area, is that we, during the course of this week, will be rolling out two new automated services. We've developed an automated service around audit appointment, which has been open for a long time. It was previously a paper-based system, which took a lot of time. Now we have included it in our portal, as well as our e-services website, whereby you can appoint an auditor and line up auditor using electronic means. We've also done an automation, a partial automation of name reservation, and this is quite an exciting one because it will speed up registration, because currently all our name reservations are done manually through a human intervention. We've now develop algorithms and develop a system that can do automated checks on the back end, whether there are substantial names that can be put without anybody dealing with the human aspect of it, and therefore we should keep an extended registration for the fact concern. There's always a question around our capacity to handle queries and our capacity to deal with that. So we've got a query resolution system that we need to beef up. It's not as working as ideally as it should be. We're dealing with the issue of the call center, which I've discussed, which will deal with the queries and specify that. But we've also got an exciting development which will be rolled out extremely shortly in the next 2 months, something called USSD, Unstructured Service, whatever it's called. But basically, it is a hash 11 star service whereby if you want to get information on your phone, you don't need to actually call in, you basically get a messaging service that can go back and forth. We get queries that go through our query resolution system that would not require any human information, and people can take out some structure of queries and deal with the USSD technology regarding that. Many of the queries we have is that how much do I have in my accounts? Where is my registration process? Why is one injected, for example? And this USSD service through a phone doesn't have to be a smartphone, it can be any phone that is currently available in South Africa, will make a call to our service, and basically will be able to do a speedy resolution of the query. So those are the channels that we're tackling in order for us to deal with the gamut tasks that the IPC has regarding query resolution and query answering. To quickly run through, I think I'm running out of time, is that the one area that was going to be a large focus of our attention this year is taking the learnings we have from our collaboration with the Department of Home Affairs by using the IMS service, because we see that the speedy resolution and the speedy application of registrations in taking that to parties who will pre-register into a service that we will apply. So we are in the development phase, a visual development phase, which should be piloted in July, whereby we will have a registration where individuals, interested parties, enterprise, government agencies, anyone who wants to have supply in the South of the center, we're able to go onto our website, register, we will do a back-end check, give the person user specifications, you can download the capability of that particular application, and therefore they'll be able to use the biometric identity verification wherever they are in South Africa. Coupling this with our CIPC education and awareness division, we therefore will have registration devices when we go out into the rural areas in particular. When they go and do awareness campaigns, they will be able to provide registration services there and then, because they will have the registration device with them, inclusive of the biometrics through a 3G portal, which is the verification of the need for paper. So therefore, we are expanding on automated themselves, and therefore, we're looking at a pilot of this by July 2015. The next slide of operational statistics is just to put the committee into the picture of where we as an institution regarding how HIT goes on, how HIT goes on, how registration goes on. On the 1st of May, the Public Acting Commission, so the 14th of May, which is a space of 2 weeks, we registered just under 14,000 new companies. That's a large amount. We do something like 22,000 to 23,000 per month, and therefore we see that, as I said, the bubble machine is probably starting, people are understanding that this is how we operate, this is how we have to agree on our service delivery, and therefore the registration is moving effectively like that. So the 1st of May, we've done B certificates, as I said, the uptake in the service offering, and the more we roll out, the more we'll see the people provide with this particular free service. Last month here, there was a big question which was asked about our website and our website availability. I provided some statistics on that. And just to show you that we have a 99% availability rate on our website. I think we have usability issues on our website that we need to tackle. And that is something that I put together as far as a strategy and an IT steering. They are meeting user service to deal with usability issues as well as the issues of how to make things easier on that particular website. I provided statistics which have improved our system to say that we have a very high attack in a 0-4 second hit rate regarding the transaction as well as the availability of those transactions. So it's my last slide for some turnaround times to see where we are. I've got these turnaround times to recall our service delivery standards and what we must be held to. As we do on main applications, there are many more applications that we do in CIPC, but based on name information in companies. We are slightly out as far as electronics are concerned because we're dealing with a little update of our database, which went down a bit regarding that. Also, we, together with our electronic services, use a lot of our emails in order to index and trying to also make the PAC system to try to get some stability regarding that. But as far as all the rest, we in our service delivery stands, as I said, we have a little bit of a issue. Part of it is we need to look at those regarding electronic newcomers in the registration. Madam Chair, that was just a quick update from our side regarding where we are as an organization. There's much more we do, for example, in the IT space, which I'm not into, I think, because of time constraints, but I'm free to share. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I want to just emphasize the point that the Minister was making about the broad-based ownership schemes. Just to re-emphasize what the Minister said, we have now brought absolute legal certainty to this issue of how many ownership points you get for broad-based scheme. So in Government Gazette, on the 15th of May, Government Gazette number 38799, the Minister issued a new Government Gazette, which in that scheme it basically withdraws the clarification which was issued on the 2nd of May. So as we're saying, that you get now full ownership points, the full 25 points for broad-based ownership. As I said, we also distributed and clarified with a number of listed companies who were busy with BE transactions or who had done transactions in the previous month, in the packaging sector, the property space and so on. So just to emphasize now, there's absolute legal certainty in the market that the status quo exists and that, and as the Minister emphasized, we will not be using ownership points to deal with the issue of broad-based schemes. We will be using funding provisions, and we will also be using a positive campaign to get the real broad-based BE schemes going.
Thank you very much, DG. Just very quickly, Advocate, this USSD and EHA and HANIS, just give us the full term. Now, I knew it wasn't the United States.
No. It's just, the way I always meet, I always ask them, just to send it to you properly, is when you provide the service, when you say *111#, for example, it's a call, they will send you back your balance, and they will send you back whatever other query you might have. Basically, you will switch your phone, you will send the query to a particular number which we will provide, and therefore you will get automated response as to what you query. HAIT is Home Affairs National Identification System, HANIS, which we call it as HANIS.
And
Department of Home Affairs.
Okay. So yes, of course, there we are, thinking, Gigi. USSD, would you just get that later on, you know, electronically from you in an email? Very fine. No problem at all. I think it is on that one too. The number of Nigerian companies registered. What would that be? I mean, you know, often we're being compared to Nigeria for this sort of thing. And here we're dealing with, 20,000, 22,000 in their short space of time. Are they dealing with 2,000? What are we looking at? Let's just think of what the comparison figure is, please. All right, then, if we're going to turn directly to yourselves, in between the tea breaks, yeah. Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable McPherson. Anyone else? Right, Honourable Cornwall. In that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and to the Minister and your team. There is a breakdown to the two. I mean, the presentation is jumping back and forth, but it's not with the CIPC. I mean, there's a couple of things that concern me about this episode of the CIPC. Obviously, it was very concerning to us to learn just how far the organisation had, how unstable the organisation was, the first time only in the media, when the news broke of what was happening there, and indeed of the forensic reports. And I think this committee is responsible for oversight of the CIPC, and I think that the department should play a little bit more open cards with the committee in terms of tabling forensic reports like that for our information and perusal before they lead to resignations. It does strike me as odd that the former commissioner, the now former commissioner, although I must have, I seem to recall her resignation letter said that she is leaving on the 1st of June. I might be wrong about that. But it strikes me as odd that she received a letter of intention to suspend, or rather a request for reasons why she should not be suspended, and yet the chairperson of the company tribunal
Lewis, you know, when we use adjectives like surreptitious, it's a certain connotation to them, and it's, you know, I'm just not sure that that's got some validity if it was made in that manner.
This
must be a bit more caution. Thank you.
Well, that's my view, Chair, and I think your view as well. Let me just move on to the BBE post then, if I may, Minister. Look, I mean, you know, you speak to industry bodies in South Africa and business at large. One of the basic indicators of investment in South Africa, anyone will tell you, apart from an unstable labour regime and the obvious things around electricity, but almost all of them will always respond that a lack of policy certainty is one of the biggest indicators to investment in this country. Now, the BBE says, you know, we have now provided absolute legal certainty in his words. But that is after 2 weeks of complete confusion. And, you know, simply because you've issued a gazette now last week Friday, which revokes everything you've said for the last 2 weeks and takes us right back to the beginning, status quo, doesn't mean the business knows about that. So, you know, this weekend, all over the weekend press, and even today across the country, business is still completely confused about what's actually happening and what are they expected to do now in terms of PE. And it leads to many of them saying we can't deal with, you know, their core business is to sell their products or deliver their service, and they can't deal with all this uncertainty in the economy around what they are required to deliver in terms of their PE commitments. So, you know, I don't actually agree that you've delivered absolute legal certainty, DG. I think you know, it might be legal certainty, but there's no clarity in the business community about what they still need to do. And I think the DTI now needs to go on a concerted effort around the business community, around South Africa, and meet all of the chambers and explain to them how this messy confusion came about and what the current situation is and what they are required to do. Are you calling me to order, or I'll save the rest?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think what we've seen in the CRTC is a worrying trend in DTI. I think we have so many actors now, you know, the department is resembling a pantomime as opposed to a government department. There is no certainty in DTI anymore, and that is equally concerning for the business community as well. You said that your intention were to want to stabilise the entity, but I think, as my honourable colleague has said, is that I don't think it's ever been so unstable as it is right now. And you also mentioned, you know, that you didn't want to get into interpersonal issues between yourself and the former commissioner, but clearly interpersonal issues were one of the key reasons that have led to this mess. And I want to quote from an interview that she said, "I'm resigning because I am no longer willing to exercise the role of commissioner without the support of the Minister of the Department of Trade and Industry, through my report, in the face of sporadic illegal industrial action, intense creative crimes, intimidation, and allegations of misconduct and corruption intended to discredit me and some members of my management team." She went on, you know, to say that quite frankly you two didn't have a good relationship. I mean, how is someone supposed to operate in an entity where they don't have the support of their principal? And, you know, clearly the issues of Nahawu are one of the very clear issues that have put instability to the CRTC. And from her version of events, it appears that it was not something that you were willing to support her on. And in fact, by not supporting her on the illegal industrial action that Nahawu went on, you in fact condoned it. And I'd like to please understand if you still maintain that these personal issues have nothing to do with it. I want to go on to the eco, and I think that what we see at the moment from DTI is a schizophrenic knee-jerk reaction to VE and the implementation thereof. You said that one of the reasons why you have brought this new clarification is because of fronting, but could you just advise us how many cases of fronting have actually and legal recourse taken against that, because that would surely have to be the basis against which you acted. Uncertainty creates job losses, and by your own admission, you've used the sledgehammer to try and swat the fly. And is immense. And what engagement have you actually had with industry bodies and business bodies, and what impact placements have been done with the original clarification that were done at the beginning of May? And if you have that, if you could please let me know. I think, Commissioner, I'm still concerned that there is this idea that you are looking to pacify Nauru to make the CRPC work. The RPC cannot be held ransom to a union. It has to be based and it has to follow good practice, best practice, an institution that works for the good of all South Africans so that they can start up their businesses, register their businesses, as opposed to protecting a few insiders. You said you wanted to deal with the moratorium and have the moratorium lifted. I'll give you a bad piece of advice. Go ahead and do it. You don't need to wait for anyone else's engagement, because that is what is needed to get the RPC going, to fill the vacancies. Go ahead and do it. Because there are protected interests, clearly, within the CRPC that it would appear from the top is trying to protect those interests, as opposed to the interests of South Africans who actually want to create their businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable MacPherson, just you quoted from something printed in the media or one of the financial magazines. Please make that available down to the table. All right?
Can I put it on the record for you, because it's on my computer? It is from the 20th of April, 2015, in the Business Day. And it was an interview done with the former.
I think we were aware of that, were, you know, the interview itself, but just the date escapes us, so you need that for the record. Just before I take the Honourable Cornwall, followed by the Honourable Mantage, I must just caution members that we need to be somewhat sober in the choice of our adjectives, which are not our adjectives which as yet have to be proven, as it were. And it would appear as if Honourable MacPherson, the labour issues remain with the CCMA, but we will get further clarification on that one. Honourable Cornwall.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to focus a little bit more about the future, because SIPSI is important to, you know, doing business in South Africa. So I'm very pleased to see that the collaboration with the banks are proceeding well, at Resource and with the other entities, integrated services. So that is important, but I want your word. You know, SIPSI was with us now for a year. And I think the turnaround strategy, you know, I like what I see, but I really would like from your mouth again today that are you happy that we will not have the same problems in the next 3 months? Second question, you put a moratorium on penalties, you know, for late returns. The only reason was because of the problems at SIPSI. When will you lift that moratorium, or is it being lifted? If it's being lifted, good news, that you think you can do the job.
Thank you, Honourable Cornwall. Honourable Mantashe.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you. I went from this side happy about the rollout of the SSCs over the country, because most people in the rural areas have been suffering. And the chair is just unfortunate, and it is unfair that the airplane put at the face of the department, you know, as far as Honourable MacPherson saying it, you cannot, because the labour in that institution has a right to engage with the labour action, and it is not invited by anyone. When they feel like they have to go on site, they want to. So you can't put any door in the department. It is not. It is unfair to the department. And I strongly feel that you make statement with broad statement. It is not correct. But we're very happy that the evidence and just all out all over the country.
Thank you, Honourable Mantaj. Can we turn to the department now to respond to those? I do have some comments myself, but that was a bit long. Questions to be responded to, please.
Well, let me start, and I think that
some of the hyperbolic remarks like there's no certainty in the DPI anymore and things like that. I think I would just want to reject those. I'm not going to go into any further detail there. Just to say that on the I described the events as they unfolded. Now, when the forensic report comes out, I think the first duty of us as the executive is actually to act on the recommendations of the forensic report. That's our first duty. The question of, I don't think we are expected to come to Parliament, put the forensic report down here and ask advice. It's not us. Our job is to actually execute. So that was what we did. Let me say, I don't believe that there is an inconsistency in terms of, I believe the committee's gone in for some considerable discussion about the National NCT Companies Tribunal. And I think you probably are aware that the recommendations of the forensic report are quite different to the recommendations in this particular case. I think that's the point. We have not hesitated. Sometimes you can anticipate that maybe the results of the processes are going to lead to a fairly minor sanction, if any sanction at all. But it's still our duty to follow the due processes provided by the PFMA. I think that's really what it's about. Now, I think that what is a critical matter is you can read any number of books about what digitization brings. Digitization is a process that potentially has a number of HR management challenges that go along with it. That you are replacing manual processes with digitized processes. There are a number of concerns and uncertainties that arise. And I think that one of the skills and requirements of managing those processes, and I think that I would like to make the Commissioner, Acting Commissioner, come along and show you that we are not diverting from the reforms that we had before. We are following the same strategic direction. But I hope that this will happen in a way that addresses more proactively a number of the human resource management issues and avoids the situation in which those become big thorns in the flesh of the institution concerned. That, I think, is what it's about. And that's been our experience with agencies. Just to go back to the NRCS, this is not under the current leadership, but it was under previous leaderships. There were a number of issues that came up in that regard, and somebody was suspended for a long period of time, and there was no disciplinary process that followed. This became a festering sore in the institution. And I think that what we were able to do is to find a solution. That's what it would be. Let's find a solution to bring stability to the organization. That's been our role the whole time. That was my first reaction when we were presented with the demand. The demand said, yes, it did say, get rid of the commissioner. By the way, it wasn't only the commissioner. And we said, we're not going to respond to that. We're going to try to understand the issue behind that and create a basis for the institution to move further forward. Now, I think that although people have autonomy in management, we don't try to micromanage the way they operate. Where there are problems, they explode in the face of me as the minister and in the face of the DG, they do. The entities report to us. And I think it's our duty to try to find solutions where we can. I think the issue was that. Now, I actually said in the meeting with the staff that I supported the commissioner, the then commissioner, in the strategic direction she was moving in the organization. I said that. I mean, all of the things that we've just been discussing, the rollout of the kiosks, the banks, the SARS, the fundamental aim is to end up exactly what the chair said, that this organization is not on the pages of the newspapers, but it is measured in the indexes of competitiveness. I mean, I'm not sure that the country you mentioned is the benchmark. But there are others that we want to benchmark ourselves against. We want to be providing an effective, competitive service where we can go around to people and say, this is how long it takes to register a company. But by the way, we are not also offering a kind of tax haven, a dodgy deal our service. So we actually do have to follow through with probity. So we go to the issue. So we may find that somebody is able to do 5 minutes of that, but are they actually doing the kind of rigorous checks that are required? So we don't get bogus companies, front companies, all of those kind of things on our database. I think that's really what I would say. And I want to say this. It wasn't interpersonal matters between me. I never had any personal matters with the commissioner. My approach has always been, since I've been the minister, that I'm not about changing people. My first priority is to work with the people who were there. I mean, I was on the interview panel when she was appointed. But in the end of the day, it's our managers of entities willing to accept our support, our advice, and the role we can play, like the NRDS, or do they say it's my matter, my business? You must just give me a blank check and just accept everything I say. So I don't want to get into all of that. I don't want to say my assessment of strengths or weaknesses of the former commissioner. She had both, and I think that we never condone illegal action, illegal strikes. We never condone those. And then just to come back on the question of the codes, I said one point that you made. We've got a communications issue. Even those of you that are not allowed to read the advanced publications like the Case Science may not have seen yesterday that in this report there was an article, this one I'm showing it to you, which exactly doesn't know that what we did on Friday. And by the way, I think that some of these reports are talking about all the negative effect on investors and whatever, but I don't actually see anyone telling us which investor has got concerns and which investor is now considering doing something like withdrawing or not investing because of this. I don't see any of that. I see lots of commentators saying that will happen, but we will engage with people who've got issues and queries. I think that the approach, I've described the approach. I think that approach, for those of us who still believe that DE is important, which is not everyone sitting here, I don't believe in this. You want to tell us that the new leader is going to flip again on this question. Is it to be or not to be, or is it to be or not to be? I don't know where you stand on that. But really, I think our approach has been that we live by doing. That if we see that something has created a problem, then we're prepared to be self-critical and go back. The concern, how many cases have I been? Well, the commissioner is not yet appointed. The process of recruitment is happening, but the commissioner is not yet appointed. So how many cases are there? Well, we can't give a statistic yet, because no one's referred those. But we did have a lot of information which led to the introduction of the statutory definition in the bill of fronting and appointment of the commissioner. There were many cases that people were talking about of what I think we call complex fronting. This is also the research and the work which was done in the Presidential EE Commission. That was what came out of that. So I think that we have a communications issue. We need to tell people. But actually we have been communicating on the guts of the new codes quite extensively. We get 18 months, we've been telling people what it's about and how it's ready and so on. That's why we have a long lead time for people to do that. But I mean, I think this is one issue on the side of a very fundamental and important case. Then I think that Chair already said that the moratorium was a CCMA review. This is a decision of now or anything like that. What we've got to do is we've got to develop a constructive dialogue with the union. The unions don't call all the shots. They don't set the strategy. But we do need to bring people on board. That's it. And I found that in my own experience, that when you try to just avoid this, what happens is you have an industrial relations problem, where you try to work with people, very often you bring people on board. That's what I see. So I think the acting commissioner, well, we will eventually have to appoint a proper full-time commissioner, but the acting commissioner, I think the acting commissioner's task is to proceed with influence, but the role is to continue to roll that out and at the same time to create a greater level of stability with staff, bringing the staff on board. That's your mandate. And so I think that really that's why we insisted on bringing this forward in presentation here by the Acting Commission. What has happened in office for a little bit more than 2 weeks? And already I think you can see some things are continuing, some things are improving as a result of dialogue and engagement that is happening. And I think it's your role to continue to hold us accountable for improvement in the service. As far as the forensic report is concerned, like all of these things, they contain various things about individuals. It's not only the commissioner, it's only individuals, and there are some processes which are the responsibility of the commissioner that they didn't take it up with other people. I think we can, as we always do, provide whatever information we can and relieve us as much as we can. But I mean, I think I just want to say that my approach is not to is to consistently and to follow when I get a piece of advice from a forensic investigation plus the legal services. It's quite a high bar for me to say I'm going to ignore that and just do what neither of these things is right. That's what happened in this case. By the way, I think the DG might want to say in the audit committee meeting that he was attending yesterday, I think the conclusion, the consensus was that we had done everything as required of us. And by the way, the conducting of this forensic report was a kind of one point of consensus that everybody had, that we should do that. There were differences of some of the other recommendations, like the call center, there were still differences over there. But there was an absolute consensus that the forensic investigation should proceed and deal with the allegations that were made. I have to say on that even if we're not dealing with people who don't believe allegations of hands in the till, but we're dealing with allegations of non-observance of procedures in the PFMA, there's quite a lot of money attached to them. Whatever you think of the PFMA, whatever you think of government procedures, compared to the private sector or whatever, if you think this is bureaucratic or whatever, if that's what you think, you can think that. But your actions have got to be conforming to the law. That's a fundamental requirement, and that's what we've been telling everybody. That's also been our approach when our own audit comes in. People say, it's silly, why do we have to have three quotes or this and that? And so, well, that's a debate for another time, but your mandate is simply to comply. And I think, just to anticipate, I think you're going to see some quite good news when we get those audit reports later on. Thank you.
Right. So I just want to check the etiquette. Yes, I will. Follow, to just continue with this. And we'll come back.
No, it's a question of clarity, Chair.
With the Minister.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Just, I'm sure that I recall that the Commissioner's letter of resignation is the 1st of June. So can I just have clarity on that?
Sorry, I didn't tell you about that. Yes, as far as the benefits and everything are concerned, and the payments, the effective date is the 1st of June, but she has leave, and so she's not in charge at the design.
Thank you, Minister. Can I get a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just pick up some of the questions from an operational perspective. I think the Minister has answered all the ones regarding some of the organizational and people issues. The one question that was asked regarding the correlation between websites availability and the 7 working days to register the company, there actually isn't a correlation, simply because when the website is functioning, it's just a matter of lodgement. It's still back end, because it's not an automated registration process. It's still a human component that goes in the back end. And that human component issue that we're having there is regarding a new innovation that was done about a year ago on an indexing system. And last time the index is an indexing system because of the issue, not the website that's related to it. So there is no correlation regarding that. I get a call regarding the waiting times and the uptake of the call center, and I will report that at our next reporting cycle. I do not include it now because we are going through this whole mode of dealing with the issue of setting up a traditional call center. So on our next reporting, I will certainly do that because we need to capacitize fully, bring in the staff, which started, and I'm sending my reports, and then we'll be able to deal with the issue of how long does one take to answer, what are the statistics around that.
We thank the honourable member for the comments made regarding the SST. It was welcome. For me personally, as acting commissioner, I made that one of my top priorities because I believe that we need to increase our footprints and certainly want to roll it out and lengthen West Africa and therefore the partnerships with IDC Transit help our own service centers as well as issues on SARS and MIDA will certainly add to that in terms of full rollouts of our capability and the practices to deal with quicker registrations. The question regarding the moratorium on anti-terms, yes, there is no, there's a lifting of that because the anti-term system functions fully. There are no concerns around the lodging of annual returns, and therefore we encourage all companies to lodge in time, and therefore to ensure that our registrations are up to date regarding annual return lodgings. I think I've covered all of that.
Thank you very much,
DG.
Yes, I wanted to make two comments. The one is just on the labour relations issue which has been raised earlier. Can I just assure the committee that we are dealing with this issue of labour relations. We've had bad management of labour relations at a number of agencies, and I think 2-3 years ago we had strikes at NRCS and we had labour unrest at SAS. It was in that context that we then, on the request of the minister, we were asked to look into this matter. We've completed the work on that, and what we are establishing now is a centralised bargaining forum for entire DTI agencies. And that is what Edward Kabola was referring to when he said CIPC is also going to be a full participant in a centralised bargaining forum. The second recommendation we made is that you need to appoint senior qualified HR managers. Because in the DTI we have double, triple the staff of our agencies, but there's no labour problems in the DTI because we've had a bargaining chamber with the union where we institutionalize and deal with grievances on a monthly basis, problems are resolved and so on. So we are establishing a similar structure at all the agencies, a centralized bargaining forum for dealing with wages and other issues, and then each entity must have a divisional or entity chamber to deal with their specific day-to-day operational or let's say specific labor matters specific to the institution and so on. So that's how we are going to, so we've moved proactively to deal with the question of managing the labor relations matter. The second one is, I think the point is taken and the minister has acknowledged that about we will beef up the communication, but let me just say that legal certainty is an objective fact. There is now, as I said, absolute legal certainty on this matter, and that is why the Gazette was published, so that it's not a question of pronouncement in the newspapers or anything, it is a legal fact that the codes and how Broadway scheme. But I can also assure the committee that we have been in personal contact with a number of the CEOs who have done the transactions in the past month and are currently busy with transactions on JSE listed companies. We've also had a few communications with BLSA, Business Leadership South Africa, and BUSA, who have communicated to their members the issue about these changes to the Gazette, and gave them prior notice of the ministers signing on the Gazette and so on. So I think, but as I said, we have to communicate, and we'll probably do so at the press conference that the minister will be having this week. We will again probably make a formal announcement to the journalists.
Thank you very much, DG. I noted here you made second reference to it, the acting divisional manager HR. You have already appointed such a person, it says here. Who is that?
Manager, CIPC appointment. His name is Logan Chi. He was the previous HR manager of Sucro.
Is a crucial appointment and clearly a response, positive response to some challenges that have been faced there. I just want to indicate a couple of things to the committee that I think the statement by a committee member that the DTI is unstable was actually a reference to CIPC. It's unfortunate that the Honourable Member is not with us. He has to have attended another committee meeting and not the DTI itself, per se. The other issue, the deals with the forensic report, we have already dealt with that and got legal advice that the person who originally requested loved. He is a member of Parliament in the National Assembly, but a member of another committee. So that person is, of course, quite entitled to pursue that. But any other further information you would like to share with us, we welcome that as well, Minister. That would be useful. The third thing one wants to really, comment on is the issue around unions, the working, and so on. I think the committee has maintained this term, and an abbreviated term, that it is absolutely critical that all businesses have and develop positive relations. That is really important for productivity. When you don't have positive working relations with the workers, management and workers, it is always a negative impact. That's across the board, whether it's a public sector entity or whether it is the private sector itself. The third thing is that we would, in that regard, that we would like to be kept regularly informed on the progress that is being made with respect to the CCMA processes, and not wait to see these related to us or relayed by the media. On a positive note, rather than see this as unstable, I was actually pleasantly surprised at the progress of the footprint that has been made. It would seem as if all of us, and perhaps quite rightly, have been focusing on governance issues. And in so doing, we may have lost sight of some of the progress that we ourselves have called for, and which now we learn has moved ahead with leaps and bounds. But of course, the point here is both governance and progress in this must be a balance. You can't have one at the expense of another. We do agree on that point. And of course, when it comes to the PMMA, I think that these are serious allegations. We ourselves have said the entity that collapsed, the National Gambling Board, by government. So now I don't think it's a matter that should not be taken seriously by the minister. I think it's a very serious matter. And if not taken seriously, may have resulted in a similar thing to what we had under Cipro, which we don't want a repetition of. But we really would like to call on all the entities, not just this one. Governance is important. Labour relations are important. Without those two, productivity will not make the progress that we want it to make. But I do want to thank you with respect to the CIPC, Minister, DG, and the Acting Commissioner. And we hope your acting career does not extend too long and we do get a full commissioner soon. The other issue is on the BBBEE. Yes, I'm sure all of us were concerned when we read newspaper reports. And I think that most members of the committee recognise and welcome your acknowledgement, Minister. Look, we may have been too tough here. We may have used a stronger measure than intended to set the records right, to put matters right. And I want to thank you for recognising when perhaps mistakes may have been made in terms of the strength of the application to set something back on track. And again, that may be to us a caution when we look at these things to say, right, what are the implications here, and so on. But I do think an 18-month stretch was a long time for people to get a full understanding of these codes. But we may wish to invite the BEE person back and the DDG just to ourselves get a better understanding, perhaps in July, August, before we undertake the annual reports themselves, Minister. All right, on that one. And I think that really moves us right on. I know that we have got another meeting coming up, and we need just 3 minutes to address the program. So unless, Honourable Kalako, you've got anything at this point, you're fine. Honourable Gil Lewis.
Very much. A couple of things. Look, the issue is not that the minister has come to Parliament to offer our advice on these kind of reports, but it's useful for the committee to know about them ahead of them being appearing on the front page of newspapers. oversight by prior application, but I don't think that's the intention of the parliamentary committee. So you have an obligation to ask us for advice, but I think you should at the very least give us the report and let us interrogate ourselves and come to our own view on it. I will say again that the other forensic report recommends that you recover the costs involved from the chairperson of the company's tribunal, and I still do think that there's a consistency issue. Then on DE, Minister, I don't think that the governor of the Reserve Bank is just a commentator. He's a very active player in the economy and a very important one of that. And he has said in an interview this week that one of the greatest challenges facing the South African economy is the lack of policy certainty from the government. So I think that is a real issue, and the episode of the DE code for the last 2 weeks has exacerbated that issue. I think we must acknowledge that it has exacerbated that issue. Again, the DG refers to absolute legal certainty. It may be clear in legal terms, DG, but it's far from clear among business. It's clear enough. So a lot more work needs to be done to undo what happened in the last 2 weeks on your part at the department. I just want to finally deal with this concept of learning by doing, and just go very briefly through how this mess came to be. I mean, you talk about the fact that businesses have had 18 months to prepare themselves for the implementation of these codes on the 1st of May 2015. But then on the 2nd of May 2015, the day after they're supposed to have implemented the new codes, came this extremely confusing communication. And then after that came a clarification of the communication, which was then followed by clarification of clarification. So you can see it's not fair to say that they've had 18 months and can't cry foul now, when the day after they're supposed to have implemented the codes, their understanding of the codes was going to complete disarray by the confusing communication from the department. So it's not a matter of learning by doing, because you have also had 18 months to be clear and precise on what you meant by certain aspects of the codes, and you were not precise. You were confusing. And the day after the code is supposed to be implemented. So, we can interrogate a lot more. Who do you consult before issuing the 2nd of May notice? Because it seems like no industry body or organized business body was consulted before that. Certainly none of them indicated that they had any idea this was coming before the 2nd of May. So, I'm all for learning by doing, but then you must please do that and not use that as a retrospective justification for complete confusion.
Minister?
Well, I don't think that there is confusion or lack of certainty about the fundamental drift of new codes. I think we've communicated a lot on that, and that what I'm saying is that that's an extremely important positive movement forward in terms of the codes. I think that's the gist of it. What we've had is, if I can just use the word, is a bit of a sideshow on one issue. Well, I think we've acknowledged that we've made a mistake. I think we've acknowledged that we did have consultations before, and those consultations, in fact, led to the identification of mischief that is there in terms of a number of these collective schemes. So it wasn't to say that collective schemes are not important because we'd like them to be there. It's not to say that sometimes we don't have to work through trust, but we receive abuse. That was what it was about, and that was what we were trying to do. Now, I think that I've already acknowledged that we would like to do further communication, not least because a major national newspaper yesterday doesn't seem to be aware of the fact that there has been this change in the Gazette. So I think that is something. But under the broader question of policy certainty, I think we're taking that matter seriously as a government, and we're trying to communicate messages much more consistently across government about different aspects of the direction we're moving in. We can have those debates when we have the budget vote debates once again. But I think on the broad direction where the economy needs to go, on the importance of a number of the tools of industrial development, on some of the issues of empowerment, I think there's quite a high degree of policy certainty about that.
Let me say, I've been engaging with our good friends in the United States on a number of things. It isn't just chicken. We went to the FIFA, and the policy issues they raised are not about BE actually. So there are other things that are being raised, and I think that BE is always something that we have to explain very carefully to investors. But I think that every time I'm involved in a presentation and I say this is what it's about, nobody can say to us that that's not the right direction we need to move in. So, okay, we had a blip. We've acknowledged it. What are we supposed to do if we find ourselves in a situation like that? I think the right thing to do is to do the right thing. It's not to, we could have tried to argue it out and sit with it, but actually we were quite concerned. Myself, I suppose if you just said my own view and the thing came through and I signed it up, which I didn't sign it up, was perhaps insufficient understanding of what the status quo was and the camps were in. Okay, we put in a discipline in place, you know, this how it goes. But it was, I think, on reflection, and when I dived deeper into it and discussed with PG, we said it was a too blunt an instrument. So, okay, let me apologize to everybody out there. So we will endeavor to do better next time. I think that's all I can say. Thank you.
No, I think we welcome that explanation, because I really do, Honorable Hilder, there's a recognition. As it has been too blunt. Let us leave it there for the moment. And let us thank the department and the DG and the minister for being with us here. Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you to the department. If you just, for the committee, just hold on a couple of minutes. Member, just back to the committee meeting. I know you're wondering why we haven't done minutes and we should, you know, we are getting behind, but we will do minutes in due course, but we have had other priorities and let me leave it there for the moment. Now, the second thing is you've had the transfer pricing. If our program had not changed, we would have brought forward the updated document with a few other inputs in from other parties. To just come here for adoption. It doesn't change the substance of what is there, but simply has little comments here and there. So I would like to have that distributed to all of you electronically. It had been our original intention when the program had changed to say, let's ask for a 2:30 and just get through. But I think that we're really pushing it. Our staff are also under pressure. You can see we don't have a full team here today. And I haven't even discussed this with the WIP because it's been a change that has come up here due to other issues. But I'm wondering, Honourable Colombo, if tomorrow for half an hour we can't get that report to a lot and get onto an ATC. So I think, you know, we do have a meeting tomorrow, as you know, scheduled with finance, a joint meeting, which we scheduled 9, they want from 10, but we could start at 9 and complete this mini process we've got at 9:15, say. So I'd just like to check with our, you know, Honorable Kalako just on that one, because he also has programs he has to attend, you see, and I don't know.
I don't know, because it's really a complicated thing, budget. And you find members have to prepare for this budget debate, and they are not serving in one committee. They are serving in other committees also. So to me, I thought maybe if we can be able to have a meeting of mine with the other government, so that we postpone this. I don't see the agents of this in any case. We can still pursue it. We postpone it until the end of budget, and then we, or until the end of budget, extended budget committees, for all those committees which are involved in the
I think the point is we needed to have our own committee position on the ATC before the joint meeting. That was a challenge. And we can't put it on the ATC until the committee here has done something. But I think the best thing for us, because I want to prioritize on one position, that we have a DTI budget coming up, all of us. And we want to free up time there and recognize it. So I will just discuss this outside the meeting with the whip and look at a position, because as I say, the meeting was scheduled for 9 o'clock tomorrow anyway, you know, in the light of that. But I understand now that the finance will only link up at 10. Is that correct? Yes. So we were scheduled at 9 anyway, you see. So let me discuss this outside of the meeting, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Just to note that there's a joint sitting for Africa Day on Friday morning, so that rules that us, I'm afraid, as a committee day. Unless we can get permission from the chief to not attend that joint sitting. But I mean, just to let you know that I'm personally happy to meet 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. But then just clarify that this afternoon's meeting is therefore cancelled.
So what is clear, this afternoon's meeting is postponed. Alright? We will meet at 9 tomorrow. I'm not sure of the chamber, but I think it's E249. Alright, there we are. Friday remains as is the parliamentary program. We don't have a committee scheduled in. And on that note, I want to thank the neighbours and adjourn the meeting. Thank you.